Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with a couple of feel-good articles from AARP, the magazine. A Year on the Loose: Why Deanna and Denny Suggett Devoted Themselves to Capturing Someone Else's Pet. Deanna Suggett: I'm a real animal person, so I am on a lot of local lost and found sites. In May 2023, I saw a posting from Barley's owners that he had gone missing at a campground about 70 miles from us. Denny Suggett: He was a mixed breed pup, and the family had only had him for about 6 months. He had been a rescue from a bad situation, so he was very anxious and skittish. Apparently, when they put him in the car to go home, he jumped out an open window and took off. The owners drove back to the campsite multiple times to look for him, but it was over 10 hours round trip for them, and they couldn't keep it up. Deanna: He kept getting spotted closer and closer to us. When we got word that he was hanging around a certain house about 12 miles away, we started driving to put out food twice a day, rain, shine, or snowstorm. Denny: You must understand that Deanna was cooking him warm meals, liver and hot dogs over kibble. Deanna: Just one look at that face and I was a goner. He was so innocent. He started to wait for us and come out when we were there, though he always stayed at least a few feet away. One property owner and I put out a coyote trap, and we also tried a special skittish dog trap and a snare, but he was too smart. He wouldn't go near any of them. Denny: This went on for a year. People raised money to pay for a dog trapper and tracker to travel up here, but even she couldn't catch him. Deanna: During blizzards, I prayed I would make it to Barley to feed him before I ran off the road. I couldn't stand the thought of him out there waiting for me and me not coming. Denny: Another trapper contacted us. She was a retired Army vet tech, but she wouldn't take money. Deanna: She finally caught him last July. He wrecked that trap trying to get out. We were so excited to let the owners know. They had never given up on Barley, but they told us we had worked so hard to save him that we should keep him. Denny: The vet couldn't believe what good shape he was in. With all that food, he had gained 30 pounds. Deanna: Barley adores our other dog, Sadie. With humans, he's still in survival mode, but he will allow us to pet him. And he just started wagging his tail after nearly a year. Denny: He is learning to be a dog. Deanna: So many people helped us. They still stop by, email, call, and text to see how he is doing. Barley brought a little community together. To me, that says a lot about a lot of people. We all believed that if you have someone counting on you, you cannot give up. And this story was as told to Beth Levine. Lake Superior State University retirees Deanna Suggett, 67, and husband Denny, 70, live in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Deanna is an administrator for the Mackinac, Chippewa, and Luce County Lost and Found Pets Facebook group. And next, under Real Heroes, Big Cat Trouble, Battling Back from a Cougar Attack. When an animal pounced, Carrie Bergere's friends rushed to save her. Annie Bilotta says, Five of us were doing a training bike ride on a forest trail near Falls City, Washington, last year when a cougar appeared and pulled my friend Carrie off her bike. Ann Teets, I was the first to get to Carrie. I started yelling, Cougar! Tish Smith-Williams, Erica and I were biking up ahead and heard screams, and we turned around. Erica Wolf, My 911 call kept dropping. Annie and Owen were already battling the cougar, which had its mouth locked around Carrie's face. Carrie, His one tooth had sunk into my temple, and another tooth was up under my chin. The pain was searing, but I wasn't giving up. I stuck my fingers in his eyeball and up his nose. On. I'll never forget the animal's determined stare at that moment. Annie. I went straight for the cougar's neck. It was like choking a rock. Same thing when I tried prying open its jaw. Nothing. I grabbed a paw. Tish. I found a big rock and hit the cougar's ribs with it 20 or 30 times with no effect. Then I pointed out an even bigger rock near Anne. Anne. It was a deliberate situation. I had to drop this melon-sized boulder near Carrie's head. I dropped it multiple times from a squatting position. It wore me out, but I kept thinking, you're not taking my friend from me. Carrie. About 10 minutes, the cat cinched down and started crushing my bones. He pushed my nose and mouth into the dirt, and I started suffocating. Then there was a moment. Annie. It was like a miracle. The animal relaxed its bite long enough for Carrie to scramble away. Erica. We used my bike to pin the cougar down, but it was still battling. On finally reached 911. Annie. We're all small women. A couple of us are 5'2". We all stood on Erica's bike and waited 30 minutes until Fish and Wildlife came with a gun to dispose of the cougar. Carrie. These women saved my life. They refused to let me die. I spent 9 hours in surgery the next day and 5 days in the hospital. My face continues to be numb. Tish. Somehow the rest of us escaped with only minor scratches, but the experience affected us all. Annie. I don't have that carefree feeling in nature I used to have, but maybe that's a good thing. On. If I'm heading into nature now, I'm going with a knife, bear spray, a first aid kit, and at least 4 other people. Erica, I really feel fearless now. Recently, a big dude in a giant truck tried bullying me out of a parking spot, but I didn't back down. He was shocked and drove off. On. In a weird way, I'm glad this happened at this point in my life. In my 20s, I was wild. The calm that comes with age helped me, for sure. Carrie, I feel like I should get resilience tattooed. Some people might think I'm an old lady, but honestly, I feel like a total badass. And this article was as told to David Hockman. Carrie Bergere, 61, is a healthcare advocate in Kenmore, Washington. Retired gardener Annie Bellotta, 65, real estate broker On Teets, 60, and attorney Erica Wolf, 52, live in Seattle. Tish Smith-Williams, 59, is the director of strategic sales in North Bend, Washington. Next, I'm going to go to a couple of articles about AARP. Making Wishes Come True. An AARP charitable affiliate helps older Americans realize their dreams. Edwin Glasser, 77, paused in front of a black granite panel at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. Then he turned to his 17-year-old granddaughter, who had accompanied him to this spot he considers sacred. "I think the monument shows what we paid," said Glasser, as the two regarded the wall engraved with the names of more than 58,000 service members who died in the war. It's amazing how many people didn't get to have a 17-year-old granddaughter. Glasser was one of 16 Vietnam-era veterans from Wyoming invited in May by wish of a lifetime from AARP to fulfill a long-held desire to visit the memorial. Since its founding in 2008, Wish of a Lifetime has helped thousands of older Americans achieve their dreams, including sending a veteran to Nashville to record his original song, reuniting a 100-year-old Holocaust survivor with her sister, and helping a Pearl Harbor survivor return to Hawaii to honor his crew members who lost their lives in the attack. Others have experienced thrills like parachuting out of an airplane, scuba diving, and driving a NASCAR race car. Everybody can relate to dreams fulfilled, but also dreams that go unfulfilled, says Tom Wagenlander, Wish of a Lifetime's vice president and executive director. We believe that dreams shouldn't have an expiration date. This year, the AARP affiliate will have granted its 3,000th wish since its creation. I think we granted 3 wishes the first year, and now we're granting close to 300 annually, Wagenlander says. The hope for these experiences is to renew a sense of purpose in older adults and inspire them. These are desires that may have been held onto for the majority of someone's life, so they tend to be really impactful, meaningful, and also unique. Most wishes are about renewing and celebrating passions, connecting or reconnecting with loved ones, commemorating service, and fulfilling lifelong dreams. Ophelia Lee's wish was something she had held on to for most of her life, honoring her father for his service during World War II and all the sacrifices he made for her and her siblings. He wanted the best for us, even if he didn't get it, Lee, 74, says. In October 2022, Wish of a Lifetime hosted Lee's visit to Washington, D.C. to pay tribute to her father at the World War II Memorial. When she returned home, she started volunteering with Wish of a Lifetime. She gives presentations in the Atlanta area and leads a Cupid crew every year that distributes Valentine's Day roses to older adults who might otherwise have been forgotten on that day. Volunteers delivered about 300,000 roses and cards across America last February. Visit wishofalifetime.org to read more inspirational stories and find out how you can help someone realize their special wish. And this article was by Elise Sayrell. Now let's take a look at how we're fighting for you. AARP takes on age bias. When the company where Giovanni Barazza had worked for 21 years announced layoffs, he rested with a fear that many older workers encounter, age discrimination. Barazza, then 51, interviewed for months without success. Then he signed up for AARP Foundation's Back to Work 50 Plus program. With our support, he found a new job. Along with helping older Americans find employment, we're championing stronger laws and fighting in the courts against age discrimination. Here are some examples. AARP recently endorsed the Bipartisan Protecting Older Workers Against Discrimination Act, POWADA, P-O-W-A-D-A, of 2025. The bill would restore protections for older workers lost after a 2009 Supreme Court ruling that made it more difficult to prove claims of illegal bias in the workplace. Working with employers, AARP is engaging with hundreds of employers to help them build strong, multi-generational workplaces that value experienced workers. Fighting outdated stereotypes, the Disrupt Aging Collection, a collaboration between AARP and Getty Images, provides photography that authentically reflects how older people live today. Helping where you live. The AARP network of age-friendly states and communities works with leaders and residents to enable towns, cities, and states to be more livable and age-friendly for people of all ages, particularly older adults. Seeking better health options. We're piloting a program at universities that aims to combat ageism among future healthcare professionals, and we're collaborating with hospitals on research to improve the quality of care older adults receive. Advancing new technology. Each year, the Age Tech Collaborative from AARP sorts through hundreds of new products and services designed to help make aging easier, then provides support for the most promising ones to bring them to consumers faster. And finally, taking on illegal age bias in court. AARP Foundation lawyers are fighting discrimination that violates federal protections for older workers, helping people get or retain jobs and benefits. AARP will continue to push for change and support older adults facing discrimination. Visit aarp.org/age discrimination to learn more. Now, up front, go. This is also from the magazine, and it's three little short items here. Is it okay to watch an R-rated movie on an airplane? Somewhere over the Midwest, I looked up from my Sudoku and glimpsed a zombie apocalypse. Blood spurted across my airplane neighbor's tablet screen just as the flight attendant handed me a cranberry cocktail. I looked away, but the damage was done. As an anxious flyer, the last thing I wanted was the sight of gore and guts. Airplane movies used to be curated and edited like broadcast TV, creating a PG-ish experience for the entire cabin. But as airlines retire communal screens and lean into Boyd, bring your own device culture, passengers can stream what they want, including R-rated sex and violence. The sky may be the limit, but queuing up the substance when elbow to elbow with strangers can have consequences. You may not know others' sensibilities. Violence, sex, and nudity are certainly the principal categories with the potential to offend adults and disturb children, says Laurie Pearson, content editor for KidsInMind.com, a movie rating website. But that's not all. Scenes with accidents, gore, and vomiting can also trigger anxiety, especially for those with PTSD. A good bet for safe viewing, Pearson says, are movies released before the 1970s. Airlines are generally pretty liberal when it comes to accepting in-cabin entertainment, but there are limits. I have had to ask passengers to turn off porn, says Heather Poole, a flight attendant and author of Cruising Altitude, Tales of Crash Pads, Crew Drama, and Crazy Passengers at 35,000 Feet. If you're unsure what's appropriate, her advice, pretend you're in church with your mother, and you probably won't go wrong. And if you find yourself with the view of unsettling images, you can politely ask the passenger to turn it off. If that doesn't work, fire up your own movie to battle the zombie apocalypse, says Pearson. The only way is distraction with your own devices. Also, we have here crate expectations. Traveling with a cat? There is a simple method to coaxing that sly pet into a car carrier. Ken Pelowski, a veterinarian at Insight Veterinary Wellness Center in El Dorado Hills, California, says, leave the carrier out for a couple of days in advance with the door open. The crate becomes like the irresistible empty cardboard box, Pawlowski says. And I smile because his name is spelled Pawlowski. Remove the carrier the night before and then put it back out the morning of the trip so it becomes new again. They will likely go and sit in there and then just close the door. And finally from this page, sick at sea. A cruise ship's clinic is much more than a doctor with a medical bag. As I limped aboard the cruise ship, my left calf felt as it did when I had a blood clot 9 years before. I became terrified that I could die of deep vein thrombosis in the Mediterranean Sea. So I found the ship doctor who ran tests and diagnosed my condition as a pulled muscle. Turns out, ship doctors are well prepared for such situations. The American College of Emergency Physicians recommends ships have a laboratory, X-ray machine, cardiac monitor, and defibrillator, electrocardiograph ventilator, respirator, infusion pumps, and pharmacy, and keen medical knowledge. Says Ibram Soto, MD, who works on Crystal Serenity, We are familiar with the management of conditions of patients in advanced age groups. Now I'm going to look at an article from AARP, the Bulletin, entitled Your Life, Some New Support for Caregivers. State laws help those helping loved ones. This is by Molly Snow. Family caregiver demands in America have surged. The number of adults providing ongoing care rose 45% over the past decade, according to the Caregiving in the U.S. 2025 report from AARP and the National Alliance for Caregiving. Some 63 million people, roughly one in every four adults, are now providing regular care to ailing loved ones. It's physically taxing. It's emotionally and socially taxing. It's financially taxing, says Mary Beth Malamatos, 63, of Tarpon Springs, Florida, a full-time caregiver for her 88-year-old mother. There are stressors from all directions, and there's no easy answer. To ease the burden, some states have enacted or expanded caregiving aid. Family caregiving leave, Vermont. Lawmakers broadened the category of family caregivers who qualify for 12 weeks of unpaid family leave to be more inclusive of LGBTQ+ caregivers. A lot of times, we have laws on the books that just aren't equitable for today's world, and so it's excluding a lot of people, says Democratic State Representative Emily Krasnoff, the bill's lead sponsor. In Tennessee, lawmakers passed a bill giving state employees 6 weeks of paid leave when a family member needs end-of-life care. I think all of us would want to be able to have our family members by our side during some of those most challenging moments in life, said Verosa Freeland, senior policy manager in the Nashville office of A Better Balance, a worker advocacy organization promoting expanded leave policies. Financial support. States are increasing Medicaid allowances for nursing home residents to cover a variety of expenses, such as cosmetics, phone bills, or a birthday card for a grandchild. Iowa, Ohio, and South Carolina are among those that recently raised personal needs allowances. Angela Van Pelt, Iowa's long-term care ombudsman, said these increases enable residents to afford items that provide comfort and dignity. Caregiver well-being in Maine. After a two-year pilot, Maine expanded its respite care program, offering grants to family caregivers for adult day care services, home modifications, and medical equipment or self-care. In Wisconsin, the state lifted a $48,000 income cap for its Alzheimer's caregiver support program, ensuring that no family in need is denied assistance due to arbitrary income rules. GOP State Representative Dean Coffert, who authored the bill, said in a statement, "The program provides financial support for services like adult daycare programs, transportation, and meal delivery." In New Hampshire, the state approved a $100,000 funding increase for its respite care program that provides financial relief to caregivers of people with Alzheimer's and related disorders. This is intended to expand the number of people served, says Judith Jones, a policy coordinator for New Futures, a nonprofit based in Concord. Next is a Q&A with Joy Harjo. We hit coming-of-age moments all through our lives. At 74, Joy, America's first Native American poet laureate, reflects on the power of storytelling and hope for the next generation. In your new book, Girl Warrior, you talk about the importance of finding inspiration in family. Can you share an example? My great-aunt, artist Lois Harjo, was one of my most important mentors. I used to love going to her apartment because it was filled with stories, stacks of books, family stories, pottery made by Native friends, of hers, who all had stories. With her, I found kinship. I no longer felt like I was dropped into alien territory. Your mother was Cherokee, French, and Irish. What was she like? She and my father were both dancers. When I grew up with them, we would often have country swing musicians in the house jamming. That music filled my ears and my imagination before I had words. You say you needed to escape from a repressive stepfather. That led you to the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, which was where you began to find your creativity. When I was a student at the University of New Mexico, getting involved with the Native Rights Movement, I started writing poetry, and the music was there again. It came to me through poetry. Then, when I was almost 40, I picked up a saxophone and started fooling around. Now I'm 74 years old, and I'm playing a lot of music. Last November, I co-curated a show at the Bob Dylan Center, and later wound up singing with Taj Mahal and Jackson Browne. And 2 weeks before that concert, I was singing with Diana Krall, Elvis Costello, and Lucinda Williams. It's been wild. My mother always said that I was a late bloomer, but that's pretty late. How did you find your writer's voice? It surprised me because I had no plans of becoming a writer. I just started writing, and at one point I realized that this was what I needed to do. It made no sense to me or anybody else who knew me. I was a young single mother with 2 kids. How in the world was I going to make a living writing poetry? But I had a deep trust in what I call my council, my spiritual circle. Tell me more about that. It's there for everybody, but most people don't call it that. Some call it instinct. For me, I just know things or feel a presence. It's like a gyroscope or a level. It's a poem or a song or a painting. Something shifts. And sometimes it's not easy because art often tests our ideas of what is proper. I think of artists as the point people of the culture because they don't remain stuck in what's been done. They move forward in ways we don't always comprehend. Girl Warrior is a coming-of-age guide for young women, but the life principles you write about are relevant to men and women of all ages. Coming of age isn't just about adolescence. We hit coming of age moments all through our lives, collectively as well as individually. At my age, what's constant is that we're all getting closer to the departure gate. That's when the awareness opens up.